So we were up to we kind of finished last week our introduction to the four major personalities of the book of Qohelet, and or aspects of Shlomo, as we're going to call them. We'll come back to that. And it took us to Pasuk Yud Aleph. From Pasuk Yud Bet, we're clearly into a new section of the book because we have a new beginning, a new Qohelet, a new introduction of Qohelet, and in fact, in first person rather than third person. And so that's where our focus is going to start. Of course, we've identified for our purposes in the introduction a kind of an allusion to or reference to the four main personalities of the story, and they will stay with us as we move through the next section. So today we're going to do a lot of text, and we're going to kind of stay on this website for the most part. There's a couple of other places we'll go, but I want to kind of get a handle on the first chapter, or maybe even the first two chapters. Ani Qohelet, hayiti melech al Yisrael b'Yerushalayim. I, Qohelet, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. I applied my heart to seek and to search out wisdom, or to search out through wisdom. Wisdom is a means. Concerning all that is done under the heavens. Hu inyan ra natan Elokim livnei ha'adam la'anot bo, which is a evil thing that God has given to men to afflict him with. It's a very negative and a very kind of harsh assessment that all that happens in the world is basically a heavy burden that God has given to mankind. Ra'iti et kol ha-ma'asim. There's our first calling card. I saw all of the works. Shenasu tachat ha-shamayim, tachat ha-shamash, all the works that have done under the sun. V'nei ha-kol hevel ur'ut ruach. Everything is hevel, which is hot air or vanity or waste. Ur'ut ruach, and broken wind. Ra'uah, from the same word, appropriate for the week before Rosh Hashanah, as tru'ah. Right? Truah, which is a broken sound, ru'ut ruach, from the same root. Me'uvat lo yuchal litkon, v'chesron lo yuchal limalnot. That which is crooked cannot be made straight. That which is lacking cannot be counted. Dibarti ani im libi lemor, ani hinei gdalti v'osafti chochma al kol asher haya lefanai b'Yerushalayim. There's our second calling card. I have obtained greater wisdom than all that have come before me. Al kol asher asa asher haya lefanai al Yerushalayim. V'libi da'ar be'chochma v'da'at. And I understand great, my experience, great wisdom and knowledge. V'etna libi la'da'at chochma v'da'at holelot v'sichlut, which is our second calling card, third calling card. I applied my heart to know and to a wisdom, madness, and folly. Yadati shegamzehu ra'ayon ruach. This too is broken spirit, broken wind. Kibrov chochmarov kaas yosif daat yosif machov. The more wisdom one has, the greater the grief, the greater the anger. The more wisdom, knowledge one increases, the greater the pain. Yosif da'at, yosif mach'ov. That's number two. We're not finished because you can't, as I think we've talked about the fact that you can't rely on chapter divisions in Qohelet. Chapter divisions were added later, and I do not believe, there are some books in Tanakh in which chapter divisions are very logical. The story of Ruth, the story of Esther, very logical chapter divisions. There are other books in Tanakh, like Qohelet, where it just makes it A, illogical, and B, I mean, the divisions are in the oddest places, the middle of conversations and the middle of speeches, and it's clearly complicated. So we're just going to ignore chapter divisions. We're going to have to recreate our own divisions in the book. But we're not finished with the introduction. After he has been disappointed by wisdom, sorry, by actions and by building. He's been disappointed by wisdom, so he'll turn to his third characteristic. Amarti ani b'libi, I said in my heart, lecha na anasecha b'simcha u'e'betov. So now I will test with mirth and with pleasure. Dine gamuhav. Conclusion, that too is vanity. Nischok amarti miholal, of laughter, I said it is foolish. Ule simcha mazo asa, and what does joy or mirth accomplish? And for somebody asked me last week, why is my association with simcha, with this kind of hedonistic, folly of you know, sort of physical pleasure? At least in this part of the text, that's clearly the parallel here. Skok, simcha, tov, right, to mirth and pleasure and goodness, which are all the physical pleasures that he seeks. We'll see how that plays out in a moment. So at this point, that, and that's his introduction, Pasuk Gimel already starts a slight variation on this theme, which is to combine them all together. Tarati b'libi limshoch b'yayin et b'sari, I searched in my heart how to cheer my flesh with wine. V'libi noeg b'chochmah, v'lechos b'sichlut, in my heart embracing wisdom and understanding folly. Ada she'era eze tov livnei adam asher ya'asu tachat ha'shamayim, until I can figure out what is the good things that man should do under the heaven for the limited number of days that he has. So in this one verse already, we have all three elements. We have chokhmah, we have yayin, which is a reference to the to physical pleasures, and we have ma'asim. So already in Pasuk Gimel, we have a hint that what's going to come next is a kind of combined effort of all three elements. So we'll come back to that momentarily, but first let's figure out what's going on in this introduction. This is going to be a little bit awkward to work off here because I kind of keep jumping back chapter to chapter. So you'll allow me to jump to another screen, which you do not have, but you're just going to see it here, which is the same text and same translation. I've just put it all on one page, so it makes it a little easier to read. Is it too small to read? It's okay? Okay. So what I've done here is I kind of highlighted a little bit of the text, the themes of the text itself. This is the first introduction that we just finished reading. Ani Kohelet, and he's exploring life, he's exploring the world, and at this point his conclusion is clearly negative. Eventually he'll go from Inyan Ra to Pasuk Gimel, which is a search for Eze Tov. He's kind of first effort fails, which is to isolate each of these three domains, and then he kind of looks at them together, combines them to see if there is a solution to be found. And then eventually we'll see how that combined solution fares as well. So in each of these different domains, and I think it's not far to, it doesn't take a great imagination to recognize that each of these three domains plays a role in Shlomo HaMelech's life. We're going to see that in the text of Sefer Malach in the Book of Kings if not today, then the beginning of next week. Certainly Shlomo HaMelech is a great builder. Certainly Shlomo HaMelech is a master's great wisdom, chacham mikol adam, wiser than every man, than any man. We'll talk about that as well. And he's certainly man married, has all the wealth and all the gold and silver and 1,000 wives. There is no aspect of pleasure to which he was denied. And so each of these three elements certainly plays a role in the combined personality of Shlomo HaMelech. I think it's a foregone conclusion to recognize that at this stage of the game, we're missing one name, right? There's a fourth personality in Kohelet that we've identified who does not appear here. He will not appear in chapter 2, chapter 3, chapter 4. We won't see him until chapter 5. And that is the Yirei Elokim, the one who fears God. Kohelet does exactly more or less what we talked about initially, which is to separate each of these domains into isolation and say, okay, in the world, in the domain of the ma'asim, the expert to assess the world of doing and building and toiling and creating and mastering, right, is the one who toils and masters and builds. That person, that personality, that builder is the one who is best equipped to assess the world of building and creation, and that's domain one. The philosopher, the chacham, he is the one best suited to assess the world from the vantage point of the philosopher and the kind of designer, and the ish ha-simcha, the man of joy or pleasure, right? He is best to assess the world from the perspective of what is a gain, what do I achieve for it, for me. So each one of these is a kind of a part of Shlomo HaMelech, but he separates them, isolates them, and says, okay, each one is a kind of a extreme example, and they are extremes. No individual really is one or the other, but they're extreme examples. And the question is, where is his assessment at this point in each of these domains? In the producer, right? The one who wants to build and create, the chacham, the wise man who wants to design and understand, where is their assessment of each one? And so we'll explore. So let's look at them one by one. Let's start with the ish ha-ma'asim. Ra'iti et ha-ma'asim shenasu tachat ha-shamash. I looked at all of the deeds. Actually, I can go back to... That's fine. Under the sun, v'nei ha-kol heva l'ru'ut ruach, it is all vanity and broken spirit. Why? Simple. Mi'uvat lo yuchal yitkon, v'cheson lo yuchal yimanot. Because that which is crooked cannot be made straight, and that which is lacking cannot be counted. What does that mean? So again, working with the theory, the one best suited to assess the domain under discussion is the one who is the expert in that domain. So the builder, the creator, the doer, and he looks at the world, through eyes, in Shlomo's case, that are very frustrated. Why is he very frustrated? Because he wants to build that which is perfect. He wants to build that which is successful. And every time he turns to some effort, he finds that this road is crooked and that building is not straight, and the frustrations of the workers who don't show up on time, and the deadlines that don't get met, and if you're trying to build something, we've all encountered the frustrations of trying to accomplish and build something, and only to be frustrated by the lack of perfection in what we're trying to accomplish. And that's going to drive Shlomo HaMelech crazy, in the sense that he's constantly looking for the extreme, for the perfect. And we all, right, what's the expression? Perfect is the enemy of good, right? He's constantly looking for the perfect, and he can't find it. So all of those good deeds, all of these buildings, and all of this creation that he's done, that he's mastered, at kolam ma'asim shenasu tachat ha-shamesh, and he realizes that they're crooked and they're missing, and this one's missing a door, and this one's missing a street, and this one's missing a whatever it is. Uvat lechal yitkon. That which is crooked cannot be made straight. That which is lacking cannot be counted. And so, in the frustration of the world of the doer, the ma'asim, when that is frustrated, so because it is imperfect, and Shlomo is looking for the perfect solution, his result, his solution, or his next effort is to say, okay, take a step back. And take a step back from the world of the builder to the world of the Chacham, the philosopher. Think of the difference between the Isha Ma'asim and the Chacham. Think of it, as it will be referred to as the Amal and the Chacham. Think of them as the difference between the architect and the contractor. Chacham is the architect, the Amal is the contractor. Right? So the Chacham designs.
But does the Amal ever think it's a shortcoming in himself rather than what he's actually produced?
Again, not at this point, because that would require a kind of synthesis of the personalities. Self-awareness is not part of the conversation right now. It will when the Yirei Elokim enters into the conversation, but not before. Right, that's part of this idea of isolating each domain. He's not looking at himself; he's looking at the world, and he's trying to figure out, does the world work? If the issue is in him, that's a whole different conversation. That's, you know, that's about tshuva, and that's about self-awareness, and that's about self-actuation, etc. Those are all terminology that is relevant to the Yirei Elokim and not relevant to any of the other personalities of the text. So at this point, he's gone from the world of the failures in the contractor to the design of the architect. Because at least in theory, in the world of the Chacham who designs the world, you can design a perfect world. At least in theory, that is possible. The Chacham can design a perfect world. And so Dibarti Aniim Libi Lemoy Nigdalti Vasati Chokmal Kolashena Salafanab Yushalaim. So okay, so I applied my heart to know wisdom and to understand madness and folly and to recognize wisdom as the solution that I am seeking. Vilibi Wahabe Chokma Vada. And the result was Kibirov Chokma Rov Kaas. Yosef Dat, Yosef Machov. The more knowledge he gained, the more anger and frustration and pain he experienced. Why? Right? Because theory, design, is always going to be more successful than application. Because the reality is, the Isaron, the lacking in the domain of the builder, is the pain and frustration of the architect. Think of that. The architect sits and designs a building. Then he hands the designs over to the contractor, and the contractor has to deal with the realities on the ground. Right? Anybody who's ever been involved in building and understands the model, right? So that's exactly the two sides of the equation. The Chacham looks at the world and says it's imperfect. Why? Because the Isha Ma'asim has to confront realities on the ground that make it necessary to change the design that was originally presented to him. So that necessity makes that which he creates A, imperfect, the frustration of the Isha Ma'asim, and B, is frustrating and painful to the Chacham, who says, I built a perfect design and you changed it. Well, you had to change it because that's the way the world works. Right? Theory, right, is always better, is always, can, at least philosophically, can always be more perfect than the realities on the ground. So much, this is so true that Chazal even worked this idea back into the creation of the world itself. They describe, it's Gemara Chagiga, actually I put it on the source page for you, the very famous Rashi quotes it in Breishit, that there was a kind of a initial intent when God created the world with this great light that would be the light of the righteous and the light of perfection and the light of redemption. But it was too bright. Mankind couldn't handle it. Right? The light of creation on day one was a light in which you could see from one end of eternity to the other, the whole world, right? That was God's light. God could see the whole design. But we couldn't see the whole design. And when you saw the failures of humankind, you realized that that light was not was too bright, and therefore Madukunazo, so he hid it, which is a metaphorical kind of he hid it for the righteous of the world to come, which is a kind of a metaphorical or midrashic way of depicting the same idea that God created a perfect world. Who transformed a perfect world into an imperfect world? Who took Gan Eden and destroyed it? Not God, we did. Because we took God's perfect world and we changed it and we modified it and we sinned and we made mistakes. And we, unfortunately, right, the design of Gan Eden, how long did it last? The notion is a famous Zohar, that God looked into the Torah and created the world. Right? The Torah is perfect, the world is not. And that is the failure of the translation from design to implementation. The moment you put the human beings into the world, we are imperfect because we are creatures of choice and we make mistakes. And that is the reality. So he's gone from the Ish HaMa'asim, the mistakes of reality on the ground, move of that which is crooked and that which is lacking, to the philosopher and the frustration of the philosopher or the Chacham, Miyosafti Chochma, in order to design that world, and he's ended up with frustration. Kibudov Chochma, Rav Kas, Viyosivta, Jasif Macho. Which leads him to his third conclusion. Amar Deni Belibi, okay, Lachana Nasacha B'Simcha Ur Ebetov. So let me test with mirth and pleasure, and let's see if that helps, right? At least enjoy the world that we have. Gamzehu Hevel, that too is vanity. And here he doesn't spend a lot of time justifying his rejection of this philosophy. He simply says, Lishok Amarti Mehulal Ul Simcha. Mazo osa. Foolishness. I said of laughter, it is foolish, and I said of mirth, what does it get you? What does it accomplish? Meaning, at the end of the day, if he's looking for a solution, temporary ephemeral enjoyment is just that. It's temporary and ephemeral. It's like, quote, Pasuk in Mishle, Al tere yayin ki. Don't look at wine when it's red, when it sparkles in the cup, as it goes down smoothly. In the end, it bites like a snake and it poisons like a viper. At some point or another, you can drown yourself literally in an illusion of joy and simcha, but it's just that, it is an illusion. Lishok amarti meholal ulesimcha mazo sa, where does it get you? So at this point, his conclusion is nisht, 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 right? His conclusion is we've nixed the design of the isha ma'asim, because building it cannot be perfect. We've nixed the solution of the chacham, because wisdom is frustrating because it has to be translated into a reality, and that is frustration. And to enjoy the ride, so to speak, just physical pleasure is ephemeral and temporary and doesn't get him anywhere. And so paragraph one, grade failure. So that leads him to paragraph two. In paragraph two, he's going to embrace what we are initially going to call the combined solution. An attempt to take all three of these elements, put them together, and create a kind of a world view on life. An individual who embraces all three. And that's more or less, more than anything else, that is Shlomo HaMelech. I think that's probably the closest to a description of Shlomo's life per se, and this is where he spells it out.
Is there a difference between the Tachat HaShemayim and Tachat HaAretz?
Not in the way we are understanding the text. Midrashically, you can darshan all kinds of nuances in the text. For the sake of a pshat, I'm trying to kind of stay at a simple level. Just to understand the words, I don't think there's much to distinguish between Tachat HaShemayim and Tachat HaShemesh. These are all words that come from the creation itself, and we live in a world which is under the heavens. We live in a world which is under the sun. We live in a world, and Kohelet, for the most part, keeps his view up until the Yirei Elokim, but keeps the other three personalities keeps their view beneath the heavens. The only one who will try to glimpse into the world above that is the Yirei Elokim, but we haven't introduced him yet. Does that help answer your question? Okay. So actually, I'm going to go back to this text here because I want to explore a couple of things here. So let's come back to Al HaTorah website, and we're now in chapter 2, starting with Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. So now I'm in the same place. I just switching here because I want to kind of see the whole context, where it starts, where it ends. So I'm going to read. Today we're going to have to familiarize ourselves with the text, and then we'll whatever time we have left, we will explore. I searched my heart, how to cheer my flesh with wine, my heart guiding me with wisdom, how to lay hold of folly until I might see what was good for men that they should do under the heavens all the days of their life. This is what I call the combined solution. Here it goes. Part 1. Higdalti ma'asai. I made myself great works. Banitili batim. I built houses. Natatili kremim. I planted vineyards. Asitili ganot ufardesim. I made myself gardens and parks and vineyards. Venatati bemetz koperi. And I planted every kind of fruit in them. Asitili brichot mayim. I made myself pools of water, lashkot mehem yar tzomech etzim, and from them to water entire forests with trees. Keniti avadim shvachot, I bought servants, uvnei bayit hayli, and I had many servants in the house, born in the house. Gam mikne bakar v'tzon harbe hayali, I had the wealth of possessions of herds and flocks. Mikol shayu lefanav Yerushalayim, more than all that were before me in Yerushalayim. Kanasti likam kesef v'zahav, I gathered, amassed silver and gold, skulat melachim v'amdinot, treasure of kings and of provinces, asitili sharim v'sharot. I had male singers and female singers, v'tanugot b'nei adam, shida v'shidot, and delights of all of men, women, many. Shida v'shidot is a fascinating phrase. There's a whole discussion about what it means. I'm going to skip that for now. It's more or less, you get the drift. V'gadalti v'yosafti mikol shaya lefanai b'Yerushalayim. I increased greatly more than all that came before me. Af chochmati amdali. And my wisdom stayed with me. Nor did I resist any desire that came my way. I did not withhold from my heart any joy. My heart rejoiced over all of my labor. And this was the portion from all of my labor. I looked at all of the works of my hands that I had labored to do. And behold, all was vanity and broken wind. There was no profit under the sun. I turned to consider wisdom, and wisdom, madness and folly. For what can the king's successor do if not that which was already done? And I saw there is benefit to wisdom over folly. Like light excels over darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head. The wise one has eyes open. The fool walks in darkness. However, but I understood that one event happens to them all. So I said to myself, if in the end my demise will be the same as the end of the fool, so why did I spend all that time and effort becoming wiser? In the grave, the skull of the wise man and the skull of the fool looks exactly the same. So I said, that too is vanity. The wise man together with the fool, I never remembered. In the days that come, in the future, everyone's forgotten, the wise and the fool. How can the wise die just like the fool? I hated life. Because all the work that is toiled and worked under the sun was evil, grievous for me. All is vanity and broken wind. Why? I should have to leave all of this to the one who comes after me? And who knows whether he will be wise or he will be foolish. And he, the one who comes after me, and he's going to rule over everything that I've accomplished. All that I built and all that I became wise over, he's going to rule over it. This is vanity. I began to despair in my heart. There was a man whose labor is with wisdom and knowledge and skill. And he has to leave it all for a man who's never labored a day for it. This is vanity and great evil. What is a man of all of his labor and all of his striving for his heart that he builds and he accomplishes under the sun? His days are filled with anger, the chaos in Yanoh, and pain and anger. Even at night he takes no rest. This is vanity. Now, I'm going to make a big jump in assertion that I have to prove to you, but it's going to take a while to prove it. So for now, you're going to take it at face value, which is that Pasuk of Dalid begins the next section. And the reason is because, well, several-fold. Number one, his conclusion is ein tov ba'adam she'achal v'shata v'ra'at nafshato ba'amalo kam zora'iti ani kimiyad ha'elohim hi. Just in that verse alone, we can already see that we're into a different transition. First of all, you have to read this initial phrase correctly. Ein tov ba'adam she'achal v'shata is really ein tov ba'adam ela she'achal v'shata, which is how it's translated. There is nothing better for man than that he should eat and drink, meaning there is a conclusion here, number one. Number two, there is a shift. Who can eat and who can enjoy more than I? For the man who pleases God, Natan Chochma Vedat V'Simcha, God has given wisdom, knowledge, and joy. And to the sinner, he's given the matter of applying and acquiring in order to be able to give to the one who is good before God. So there's two dramatic shifts in this section that tell me that from Pasuk of Dalet, I'm into a new conversation. Number one, for the most part, he's shifted to third person. The first section that we read here in chapter 2 is all first person. It's all I built, I created, I amassed, I enjoyed, I created. What is it worth if I have to leave it all to the one who comes after me, right? That kind of attitude. Pasuk of Dalet shifts to a little bit of a third person element as a kind of an objective. There's nothing better for man than that he should eat and drink, right? And make his soul better. The transition from third person to, from first person to third person is very dramatic. The other indicator here is that there is a reference to God. Even in a generic, there's a reference to God. In this chapter above, chapter 2, which started here, Amarti Ani B'li Bi, in all of these psukim, all 21 psukim, he doesn't mention God once. And that's not surprising, because in a world in which I am the center of the universe, in which 93 first-person verbs appear, which is the only place in all of Tanakh where you have 93 verbs in first person, there is no room for anybody else. There is no room for God in a world in which I stand at the center of the universe. The moment he opens up the possibility that there is a good and there is a person who is tov lefanav, who is good before God, and there is a sinner who is bad before God, the moment he opens up the possibility that there is a mayad elokimi, that God is in, has a hand in the world, that's already an indication that we're no longer dealing with the same voice that we had above. So I think that that is, those are two kind of hints, and those are the kinds of subtle hints that we will see through the, at least certainly the first half of the book, if not most of the second half as well, kind of are clues or indicators to when our voices shift. Remember, we talked about this in the first class, the problem with Kohelet, unlike Eov, is that it doesn't tell us when my voices, when our voices shift, when the speaker shifts. So we have to kind of figure that out from the content and context. So here from both, the fact that I've shifted to third person and that I have reference to Shem Hashem, we'll see that's the calling card of the next chapter. If I just jump to chapter 3 for a moment, you'll see it throughout the chapter. Pasuk Yud, Ra'iti et inyanashin atan elokim livnei adam. I've seen the burden which God has given. Or Pasuk Yud Aleph, et lo yimtza ha'adam et ha'maaseh asher asah ha'elokim mirosh v'ad sof, that which God has done from beginning to end. Or verse 13, kol matat elokim hi. Pasuk Yud Aleph, ve'elokim asah she'iru lefanav. Pasuk Tetvav, every verse references elokim. Whereas in Perek Bet, we have virtually no reference to Elokim. So that, to me, tells, that's sort of the indication that from Pasuk of Dalet, the moment he starts talking about Miyad Elokim, that belongs to the next section. Again, why the chapters were divided as they were is a mystery I can't resolve. But for our purposes, we have to kind of use these clues to see where he is, where he's going. The other clue, right? We have first person in intensity. We have a total lack of reference to God in that intensity. Not only do we have A, first person, and B, a lack of any reference to God, this individual in Perek Bet is so much the center of the universe that look at how he describes his own heir. Look how he describes his own son. Saneti ani in Pasuk Yudchet, v'saneti ani et kol amali shani amel tachat hashemesh she'anichenu la'adam she'yeh acharai. I despise all my labor. Why do I despise it? Because in the end, I have to leave it to somebody who comes after me. The one who comes after him is his son. And his son, who knows, will be wise, will be foolish. He has to rule over the labor which I toiled, etc. I mean, anybody who has children understands that that isn't a absurd perspective, and yet that's where this Kohelet begins, from this perspective that I am the center of the world, and that even his own son at this point is referred to as the one who comes after me. He can't even say the words, my son, right? It's the one, she'anichenu la'adam she'achavai, that I should leave it to the one who comes after me. As an aside, this already is also one of the clues to the profound distinction between each of the three books that Shlomo HaMelech is associated with, which is Kohelet, Mishle, and Shir Shir. Because Kohelet starts with the reference to I as the center of the universe, and there's nobody else. There's no recognition of God, and there's not even a recognition of the value of a next generation. He's dismissed the next generation of Ein Chadash, there's nothing new. The next generation is also forgotten, and therefore it's all about me and what I can enjoy and what I can benefit from, and that I should have to leave it to somebody after me is itself a source of angst and pain for him, and he stands at the center of the universe. If you look at Mishle, and it's an interesting exercise, Mishle altogether, which we're not going to spend a lot of time. Mishle is very long, but I just want to show you an interesting observation about how Mishle is written. Mishle Shlomo ben David, the Proverbs of Solomon, son of David, king of Israel. So the same kind of introduction. But take a look at the language that Mishle uses. Shema b'ni musar avicha v'yal titosh torat imecha. Right. Listen, my son, to your father's instructions. Don't forsake your mother's teachings. The entire book of Mishle is a conversation that Shlomo has with his son, with his next generation. And that carries through virtually the beginning of every chapter in the beginning of Mishle. B'ni, im tikach amarai, my son, if you receive my words, store my commandments within you. Chapter 3, B'ni, my son, don't forget your teachings. Chapter 4, Shimuvani Musar Av, my sons, listen to your father's instructions. Chapter 5, Bini Lechochmati Hakshiva, my son, pay attention to my wisdom. Chapter 6, Bini Maravta Lareacha, my son, if you become collateral for your neighbor. Chapter 7, Bini Shema Marai, you get the understanding. Meaning, if there's a term that defines Mishle, the term is B'ni, my son. He's having a conversation with his son. Whereas in Kohelet, he can't even articulate the fact that he has a son. His son is nothing more to him right now than the one who comes after him, who's going to take all of his labor and maybe even destroy it, because who knows whether he'll be wise or foolish. And that he should rule over my soil, which I created and which I was wise over, which I built. If I add the third anchor to Shlomo's world, which is Shir HaShirim, which is the Dod, and the model or the metaphor for the relationship between God and Israel, so I kind of have this transition. Kohelet is about I, Mishle is about you, and Shir HaShirim is about us and God. It's a fascinating transition if you look at it from that perspective. There is a huge debate in the commentaries which book he wrote first and which he wrote last. In other words, does he move from the youth of Shir HaShirim to the kind of perspective of family of Mishle to the frustration of old age in Kohelet, or is it the other way around? Not really relevant, other than my gut is that Kohelet starts here in this world in which he is the center of the universe, but Kohelet has an ending. And we'll see that we saw a part of that ending before, but I'll show you the end. And for now, it's irrelevant whether or not this was added by the editors or written by Shlomo, because it reflects the transformation of Shlomo himself. And it ends, Kohelet ends with the phrase, Yoter Mehema B'ni, Izaher, Asot Svarim Harbeim, my son, be admonished, be careful of making many books. There is no end. V'lag harbe yigat basar. It's kind of a description of Shlomo's world, even which Bikesh Kohelet and Sotu v'Chayfetz, Shlomo built and he wrote many proverbs and many mishalim and much wisdom, etc. So again, it comes to the question of whether or not he wrote Kohelet before Mishlei or after Mishlei. In the end, we don't know. But this is the moment of his frustration where he is at the center of the universe and he's exploring that world from each of these three vantage points, and he is frustrated in each domain. So for a moment, let's come back and look at the source of what that frustration is. At the same time, I want to look at it from the perspective of where Shlomo himself fits into this perspective. So let's see where this leads us. We're going to go back to the beginning of chapter 2, starting with Pasuk Dalet. Higdalti ma'asai baniti li batim natati li kremim asiti li ganotu padasim natatim behem etz kol peri. I made myself great works. I built myself houses. I planted vineyards. I made gardens and padasim are orchards. V'natati behem etz kol peri. And I planted trees and I made water and I used the water as pools of water to irrigate the trees. Lashkot nehem yar tzumeach etzim. And I acquired servants, male servants, female servants, bnei bayit. I had servants born in the house. Gam mikne bakar batzon. I had great flock and herds. More than all that came before me, kanastli gam kesef v'zahav. I gathered gold and silver for myself and the treasure of kings and provinces. Kulat malchim v'mdinot. Gadalti v'yosavti mikol sheyalafanai. And I increased my wisdom over all who came. Increase my mass, my fortune over all who came before me in Yerushalayim. Af chochmati amdali, my wisdom stayed with me. I'll talk about the wisdom in a moment. In this description of his wealth, extraordinary wealth, extraordinary accomplishments in building, that certainly is the world of Shlomo HaMelech. There's no question that Shlomo is known for being a great builder. I'll just jump with you for a moment into the world of the Book of Kings. And this is Melachim Aleph Perek Tet. So again, part of our challenge is that we need to look at what we're reading in Kohelet in the context of the life of its the world life view and life of its author. And so we come into the world of Shlomo. Now, Shlomo is most famous for building the Beit HaMikdash, right? Ask most people and say, what was Solomon most known for, besides his wisdom, was for building the Beit HaMikdash, building the temple. And he had a partner in that effort, was a man by the name of Hiram, king of Tzor. We'll talk about him at another time. And the problem is that he builds the Beit HaMikdash in chapters 6, 7, and 8 of the Book of Kings. So we're now looking at a glimpse at chapter 9, which means that we are after the building of the temples. Just to put in perspective, it takes King Solomon 20 years to build the temple. Why does it take him 20 years to build the temple? Because it takes him 7 years to build the temple and 13 years to build his palace. You're aware of that? That statistic in itself should give us pause on the life of King Solomon. If you spend 7 years building the temple and 13 years building your own palace, something is a little bit off. That's already a first clue. But the temple's built. Temple's done. And now we come to the following description. Chapter 15. It's chapter 9, verse 15. V'zeh dvar hamas asher he'ala melech Shlomo. This was the tax, the levy, that the king had placed. Now understand the word mas. In modern Hebrew, the word mas means tax, and taxes are paid in currency, in financial currency. In Tanakh, mas is a levy, but it's not a financial levy. It's usually, in this case, certainly, a tax of contribution of time served in the king's service. So the mas he refers to not money, but people who were engaged to serve in the king's efforts to accomplish the following. Asher amar ha-melech Shlomo, livnot et beit Hashem, to build the temple, ve'et beito ve'et ha-milo, and his house and the milo, all part of the same complex, ve'et chomat Yerushalayim, and the walls of Yerushalayim, all of that building right here. Those are your 20 years of building construction, the temple, his palace, the palace of the daughter of Paro, and the wall around the entire complex. But we're not done. Ve'et Chatzor, ve'et Megiddo, ve'et Gezer, and the cities of Chatzor, and the cities of Megiddo, and Gezer. Why were they necessary? Paro melech Mitzrayim alav yikod et Gezer v'yisrefa be'esh, ve'taknani yoshev be'ir harag. Earlier, Paro, king of Egypt, had gone and taken Gezer and burnt it and raised it to the ground and killed all the Canaanites therein. And had given it as a dowry to his daughter, who was now married to King Solomon. So Solomon built it. And Beit Choron Tachton, and he built the city of Beit Choron. And Baalat, and Tadmor. Bamidbar in the land, that kol areya miskenot asher ayu l'Shlomo, and all the storage cities that Shlomo had, that areya rechev, and the cities for his chariots, that areya parashim, and the cities for his horses, that cheshek Shlomo shel chashak livnot biYerushalayim of Lebanon, and all of the pleasures that Solomon had to build in Yerushalayim and in Lebanon and in the entire land of his dominion, ubechol eretz memshato. Who were in this tax? Kol ha'am anotar mineh moriah chitiyah pivyah chimbivah yibusiyah shalom b'nei Solheima. All the people that were left, and the Amorites, Hittites, Perizzites, Hivites, etc., and Jebusites, that were not part of the children of Israel, all of the children of the nations that Israel was not able to destroy, so Shlomo raised them as a levy of builders and manservants. And we're not finished. Ubnei Yisrael Natan Shlomo Aved. From the children of Israel, Solomon did not make bondservants. Gihem Anshei Mechama. But they were the men of his war. They were part of his army. Vavadav, Vesarav, Vishalishav. His princes and his captains and his rulers. Misarei Rechvo, Vifarashav, and the rulers of his chariots and his horsemen. And Elisarei Nitzavim Asher Melacha. These were the chief deputies who were over Solomon's work. 550 who bore the rule over the people that did the work. And. Okay. I'm going to skip the rest of it for now. So you understand that a king who has to build cities for his horses and cities for his chariots and cities for his flock and cities for his armies and cities for his men and. When you come back to Kohelet and you describe, Igdalti Masai, I built houses and I built vineyards and I built pardesim and I planted trees and I built pools and I built and I acquired servants and I acquired gold and silver and treasures and I more than suddenly Shlomo HaMelech's building campaign comes into clearer vision. And this is exactly what the Torah warns about with regards to a king amassing too much gold and silver. Remember, the Shlomo HaMelech is a perfect example of a king who violates each of the three restrictions given to a king. Right? There are three restrictions on a king. They are cannot amass too much gold and silver, cannot amass too many horses, lest he return the people to an alliance with Egypt in order to acquire horses, and he cannot have too many wives. which is essentially translated into the world of politics as can't have too many political alliances through marriage. Right. What does Solomon have? Solomon has greater wealth, gold, silver, and construction than any king has ever been in the history of Israel. He has horses and chariots by the tens of thousands, so many that he has to establish a, stop sharing for a second because I can see you, right? That he has to build cities and warehouses to store them. And he has to enter into an alliance with Paro in order to marry his daughter, in order to be able to have those horses and chariots, because that's the source of horses in the ancient world. And not to mention, Le'abela Nashim, too many wives, right? That's certainly the world of Shlomo Melech. All of this is described in the Torah as Le'arum Levavos, so that he shouldn't become haughty over and arrogant over others. Kohelet is a very arrogant book. So this is the complexity of the world of Shlomo HaMelech, right? If I come back to, actually, I'm going to come back to the sharing for a second. So we went from the building. Let's go back to the second domain of Shlomo. Pasuk Yud. V'kol asher shalu einai lo atzalti mehem. Whatever I desired, I did not withhold. I didn't withhold my heart from any joy. Right, this notion of mikol simcha, lomanat yet libi. Not hard to see that in the world of Shlomo HaMelech either, unfortunately, because that's where Shlomo ends up. Right, v'nei v'amelech. That's ultimately the part of the downfall of Shlomo. V'amelech Shlomo ahav nashim nachriot. Part of his downfall was that he loved many women, including, it starts with the marriage to the daughter of Paro, and then Moaviyot, Ammoniyot, Adamiyot, Sidoniyot, Chitiyot, women from the Moabites and Ammonites and Edomites and Sidoniites and Hittites, from all of the nations that God said, don't let them come into your people. Why? Lest they lead your heart astray to the cultures and idolatry of their background. Them, they're the ones. That's who Shlomo loved. And he had 700 wives and 300 concubines. Clearly, this is not about the fact that he loved many women. This is about the fact that he wanted to amass the greatest empire the world had seen at that moment, and to do so he needed the political alliance with all of those nations around them, Moab and Ammon and Edom and Sidon and Chiti, and the way you created political alliances was through that marriage. And the description of it in terms of the physicality and the pleasure and the thousand wives, because ahav nashim nachriot, right? The very fact that the text describes it not in terms of the politics of it, but in terms of the emotion of it, he loved many women, right, is a reflection of the fact that it's very problematic. Where does that end up for Kohelet? I didn't withhold any desire or pleasure from me. Where does that end up? I don't know. It's interesting. He rejects it with five words. This was my portion in all of my labor. This is what I was left with. What's this? So he doesn't specify. I think it's the same. From a pshat perspective, I think it's the same rejection with which he started. Ulesimcha mazosa. What does joy get you? What does it get him in the end? Historically, these wives were ultimately his undoing, because in the end, that was precisely the cause of that which undid Shlomo, all of his wives, who turned his heart to other gods and built temples to their cultures, etc. And Shlomo tolerated it and lived with it, and is associated with the creation of those gods in Yerushalayim, of those temples. That's the problem. Chazal describe it, and I'm going to come back to that source, we'll conclude with this in one more sentence, but Chazal describe it in this phrase, v'zeya chalki mekolam ali, this was what my portion of all my labor, that in initial, the transition, the transformation of Shlomo HaMelech, where he starts, v'tchila malach Shlomo al yonim, Shlomo starts with great fanfare, he sat on the throne of God, v'yeshiv Shlomo kisei Hashem. And over the course of his downfall, which is described in the Medrash in stages, but in the course of his downfall, he lo malach ela al maklo. All he was left with was his staff, as it's written, ze yechalki mikol amali, as if he's looking at his staff and saying, "This is all I have." How his staff ends up in the text, I think, is because it's a contrast to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu starts at the snare with the staff. And he ends up as king of Israel. Moshe Rabbeinu, leader of Israel, chief prophet of Israel. Shlomo Melech, the opposite journey. He starts off as sitting on the throne of God, and he ends up with nothing more than what Moshe started with, which was his staff. That's the second part of his failed journey. The third part of his failed journey is his wisdom. And his wisdom is frustrated by the fact that, you know, the old expression, you can't take it with you. The end of the fool is the end of the wise man. So why did I spend all this effort to become wiser than anybody else? Death haunts him. And the fact that Shlomo is the Chacham Mikol Adam, is the wisest of all of men, that too is part of Shlomo's world. That's what we're going to pick up next week by beginning with the story of Shlomo's conversation with God before he even builds the temple, in which God offers him the opportunity to ask of God for one gift, and he asks for the gift of wisdom. Hence he becomes Chacham Mikol Adam, and nations come to him and ask his advice and his counsel, right? So Shlomo is known for his chokhmah, for his wisdom. And where does it get him in the end? It gets him to the same place that all the other domains get him, which is nowhere, because he is haunted by mortality. And his mortality will lead him to the frustration, why should I leave everything I own to the one who will come after me? That's his mortality. His joy and his pleasures, that's haunted by his mortality. And his wisdom is haunted by his mortality. So in the end of the day, we talked about this at the very beginning, Shlomo starts with an embrace of, right, the whole search of Kohelet is an embrace of the themes of the Eitz Hadat, of the themes of Gan Eden, Tov and Ra. But what eludes him is, of course, the theme of the Tree of Life, of Eitz Chaim, because he's haunted by his own mortality, which is, to his mind, at this point, part of the limited world of that all we have is that which we see, and that which we see is limited in time. So that's the introduction to our three personalities of Kohelet. As I said, it's a very depressing start because we're missing a key voice. Whose voice are we missing? The Yirei Elokim. And what the Yirei Elokim introduces to the conversation is the fact that there's a continuity, there's an eternity to the clock. Right? We end up, our particular contribution is temporary, but that's because we're part of an arc that God is directing, and if God is directing, right, there's an element of the unknown, there's an element of the future, there's an element of eternity, right, that role will be the role of that voice will be the voice of the Yirei Elokim. Now that is chapter 2. That is our first combined effort of all three of our personalities to resolve the meaning of existence in the shadow of, or the frustration of mortality. They emanate from the world experiences of Shlomo HaMelech himself, of King Solomon. And our task moving forward is to then go and literally one by one try to understand what each particular voice is focusing on, and then to bring the Yirei Elokim into the conversation. Thank you for listening. I did a lot of talking today. I appreciate your allowing me to kind of just put this on the table. This is our introduction. From here, kind of each of the pieces will hopefully fit into the puzzle. I still have time if anybody wants to stay for questions. And if not, then have a wonderful day. And if I don't have a chance to speak...
It seems to me, from what you said, that the mitzvah that Shlomo HaMelech did not keep is "Velimadetem otam et b'neichem ledaber bam."
Well, I mean,
that was one of many
amongst many mitzvot, but his primary one is it starts from the Torah's admonition against kings in each of the three domains that Shlomo fails.
But he wasn't "Velimadet et b'neichem."
Amongst many of his friends, yes.
Excuse me, Rabbi, somebody's got their hand up.
Rabbi, Shana Tova, Shana Tova, Meduka, should have a lot of happy enachat from everything.
Thank you. The same to you. I was going to say that if I don't see you or speak to you beforehand, please have a wonderful Shana Tova, wonderful Rosh Hashanah, and should be filled with prayers that are meaningful, and the Rabban Shalom should hear our prayers. We need a year of peace and shalom in Christ. That's our primary goal.
Amen.
Can I just say that he does? I think he mentions God. I mean, I hesitate to say this in chapter 1:12.
Yes, once. Because that's the first introduction. That's before this.
Yeah, is that okay?
That's the first introduction. We're taking each piece by itself.
Yeah, you know the expression, then the Shalom HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech, I left Nafshim, v'sof kosof hu alach lishkovim avotav.
Yeah. Claudette, I think you had a hand up.
Yes, Rabbi. Thank you for that. I just have a comment. In today's society, when you look at Kohelet, one who amasses wealth is a wise person who shares it while they're here, because, you know, Kohelet says somebody else will inherit it, but the person who uses their wealth wisely is, I think, has more satisfaction in life.
For sure. But as I said, Kohelet, to get from the world of calling his son the one who comes after me, quote unquote, doesn't even have a name, to the point where he's willing to talk to his son, to engage with his son, to provide to his son, to share it with him and with others, that's a journey. And that's the journey Kohelet has to transform. So we're still at the very beginning. We're chapter 2 of 11 chapters. We got a lot of journey to get through.
So well, we know he didn't do that because the son that came after him was not successful as him. So
that we'll talk about next week. We're going to talk about his frustration in a very real sense, because we're going to look at it in real terms. Shlomo's looking at his son and he's looking at all that he had created being destroyed. Because that's what his son does. He destroys it all. Right. So we will explore that episode of Shem, if not next week, then in 2 weeks.
Thank you, Rabbi, and Shana Tova.
The same to you.
Shana Tova.
Shana Tova to everybody. Have a wonderful day and a wonderful Rosh Hashanah.